So if everyone is ready to begin, we shall begin. First of all, thank you everyone for being here. I think we're still expecting a few people. They will kind of trickle as we talk. A big thank you from my part for the invitation, Christine and Anastasia, and it's a real honor and a pleasure to have Giovanni here with us for the closure of the exhibition. But I have to say, impeccably timed, because it's also going to be the opening of Photo London during this week, and London is more than any time in the year living and breathing photography. So I am honored to welcome Giovanni here to the gallery today for a talk about his work in the present exhibition called 1982, but also to give a broader context of Giovanni's work, to learn a little bit more about his practice, and then hopefully we'll have a conversation about more, I don't know, complex and delicate photographic theory and photographic thought behind his work and the present works here. I will attempt to do a personal reading of the work. I've been doing a very sort of cautious look around the gallery, and I, other than a long list of questions, also have a very personal interpretation that I would like to then bring to Giovanni for a conversation. But first of all, I would like to introduce Giovanni. I don't know if you know much of his practice. I would like Giovanni to start by telling us, in a sort of wider scope, I know this is his third exhibition at the gallery. This is the third show that he's got in the gallery, and the previous shows that I've seen and known of Giovanni's were more photographic. But it would be great to begin the conversation by asking Giovanni to tell us a bit about his practice, a bit about his formation in Florence, right?
Florence.
And how he is now working, and the little bit about specifically the works on show.
Okay, yeah. Thank you for being here. And, it's an honor. And thanks to you. And so I would like to start to talk about my practice. I started in 1998, so I was quite young at that time. And I always had this passion for photography and for the object, for the camera itself, and for photography in general. So I was kind of collecting photos of those places that I felt as mine. And I used to collect them in a box, in a little green box. I left home when I was 16, so I had to sustain me, and I was working as a photographer assistant, and I was traveling around from place to place with this box that was my own universe. Little photos made of little scenes of houses, a tree, little stuff, daily life, and. It's through those photos, because those photos, they have been seen by an artist, and I wasn't really into art. I was like in photography, fashion photography, I was really like, I wanted to work hard.
This was Florence in the 90s?
It was the end of the 90s, Florence, Milano, London, mm-hmm. And so I was also a bit lost, I have to say, and I wasn't attending school that much. I used to skip school, high school, and go to the university, at least in philosophy. So I really had some attraction and some needs that it wasn't filled up with in the high school. So I was like trying to find a solution by my own. And so one time with this little box, this artist saw these little photos and she said to me, "You're being so egoist. Why aren't you showing them to everyone? They're very beautiful. They have something. Show them." And at the time I wasn't really into it, and so she gave me 3 phone numbers. And after a few months, I've called the first number and didn't answer. I've called the second one, and it was Pierluigi Tazzi, which is an international curator. And he co-curates Documenta and opened many museums in the world. The last one was the Mori Museum in Tokyo. And so I went to him and I showed to him these photos of mine. And and after a while, and I was 17 at that time. And after a while, he asked me, "What were you doing before?" I said, "Nothing. I was 15 before, I was at school." I said, "Okay, I want to see everything again." And so I showed him my work again, and after like a month, I got a fax. At the time, there were fax, not email, and with the first text about my work. Actually, I didn't even realize what I was doing. I didn't have any conscience, any knowledge of what I was really doing. And through him, I saw that I was doing something. And I got invited to the first show, and then a second one, and then a third one, then a fourth one. And then here I am at this last one, that is 1982, because everything began at that time. When it's my date. I'm born in 1982.
Perhaps at this point in time it's important also for me to say I'm a curator of photography. I thought it was better to, of course, introduce Giovanni first. But my name is Rodrigo Orrantia. I thought at the very beginning quite strange that I would end up talking with Giovanni in a show that people might think is not about photography. But as soon as I saw his work, and I also got to know more of the evolution of his work, I understood that was photographic to the core. And I think it connected with the work, because I've been interested in the last few years on practices that I think are essentially photographic, but have a way of resolving the works in different materials, in different processes, like we've got here. And perhaps it was how we initially met. I gave a talk about destroyed architecture and the ruin at the London Art Fair at the beginning of the year. And it was interesting how, from that moment to now, this interest has shifted from architecture, or still rooted in architecture, but is now back to the very close, intimate relationship between photography and sculpture. And I will want to ask Giovanni to start introducing the different pieces of this show. But first, I would like to propose a theme, or I would like to propose the idea of the mark, the idea of this, I think, akin to the first attempts of humankind to make some kind of art, or to make some kind of testament to being in this world. You know, making a mark that would last for or beyond their lifetime. And then I think photography at this, and his soul and his spirit, has got the challenge to try and appropriate this mark, to try and capture a moment or a mark in time. And what is so evident in this work, and is so evident in the different works that we've got here, is this attempt, which is, I think, very photographical, to capture a mark, to capture a surface, to capture a moment that goes beyond an image and is more a moment that is material. So I think that for me, that thought could be the beginning of a conversation. And I will try to kind of very orderly or disorderly ping back and forth through the works. But then, of course, we're sitting in front of what is the one of the main works of the show. But I would like, in order to create a bit of a context, because I don't really know how much you know about Giovanni's work, to bring into play your series of photographs. Are they, you know your book better than me?
Yeah.
These. These are, if you, we will probably have some of the, Anastasia, if you will, some of these books rotating through the audience, because I'd love to create a context, a photography context for your works. These works were shot where and what year?
I mean, I'm shooting this kind of photograph since 2009, and actually these photos, they are coming from a video work that I've done a few years ago, I mean in 2008. Which is now part of the Louis Vuitton Foundation. And but I would like to go a little bit in just a step before.
Just to
reach this work.
Mm-hmm. There's another one.
Yeah. At the very beginning of my research, I was really photographing, taking photo of light. Everything was like the light was as a material. It was showing what it was around us, but the border of things, the borders of everything, was loose, was lost, because the light was like eating everything. So there was this kind of something that happens. Also in landscape, you kind of breathe into light, you breathe into something bigger than you, you kind of lose yourself into light. And when you lose yourself, your individuality into light and something larger, you're no more alone. There was this kind of bigger breath. Huh? So this happened for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, let me see, I've seen something here. Like this photo, huh? So for instance, everything was merging to light. And I had a second moment where I've started to shoot at night with moonlight. So I was like looking for the moon, full moon during the month, and I was going to shoot at night. And there you really like have to allow the light to impress the film, but in order to see what you are shooting, you have to prepare yourself and make yourself able to see. So you really have to connect with your senses. You really have like, you go back to yourself as a body and you have the perception of what is around you. So there was this idea of, at the first, losing myself and then to have myself, to know where I belong, where I was, like the right spot where I was, what it was around me. There's a beautiful concept about this feeling that you have perception of yourself because what is around you, that is Stimmung, which is a German romantic concept. So for the first years, I had this light and darkness. And then with this video that I was talking about, that is Garage, which is a shutter, it's a big installation with the natural noise and sound that I took and while shooting. So there was this huge garage door, the shutter going up and down with his natural timing, okay? And while it was going up, you have this mechanical noise. Huh? Then when he gets up, goes up, you see there is this huge light and there is an horizon on the sea, and there is this full bright light. So, and this sound of this contrast between light, darkness, the sound of the wind and the waves, and the mechanical shutter. There's like this fight, or fight, better to say harmony, because like it going up and down, there is kind of breath of light and darkness. So, since this experience, this video, I've started to shoot these kind of places and photograph.
So I think, you know, to myself, you find yourself in these spaces, like derelict buildings, and I then associate the materiality, right, of the graffiti, of the walls, of the creases, of all of the spaces, and how to translate that into an image. And then I would like to start the conversation by saying, well, what is the jump, or what triggered the jump from this image or this project into the works that we have on the show? And also, if you could try and explain the process, because I think that would be a really good insight into why it is so photographic with the silicone.
Right? Yes.
So, yes. Yeah. Backtrack to that. What was that leap within the photographic and then this type of image?
So, for me, you know, we are really, everything on this universe is sensitive to light. Huh? So, and we, everything is a sensible material. And I've started to work with photography when there was the film with the gelatin. How do you say gelatin?
It was like a film, Daniel,
yeah. The film, but the layer that it was applied on top of it. It was the motion, which is sensible to light. And so, those ambience, you know, you have this perception of something artificial, broken, and ugly, and you know, heavy, tough. And it's something linked with daily life, and then you have this beautiful horizon that, as I said before, you can lose yourself and forget about your daily life. But actually, you can't live with one or the other. You really must have both, because this huge horizon that is saves you is also can be scary, because it's endless, and at that moment, your daily broken body, space, becomes something that it holds you in, and it's safe. And so while I was shooting those photos, and I was reading all these signs of all these people that pass through these buildings and they in life, and how these needs that we have as a human being, that since the beginning, like Cro-Magnon, we always like felt the needs to leave a trace of around us, and like I have been here.
Yeah, there's a few messages of
so
and dates of people.
And as I was saying before, you know, there is the truth. It has a time and a place, and so. After a while, I realized that all those walls, they were like film. Mm-hmm. Just with the only difference between a photographic film and the wall, it was the sensitivity to what it was around, okay? So it was all these traces, they were like lights touching the film. It was like, in this practically is mapping all these people that left a trace of their passage. They are showing, I mean, at the end, this wall is mapping a place and for a time, because you have some dates that goes back to 85. Mm-hmm. So you actually can see what the neighborhood was, who passed there, what happened. You have silly thoughts and silly writings, but other times you have really deep and strong writings, like one that I always like to remember, which is Ni olvido ni perdono, I don't forget and I don't forgive, which is quite a statement to scratch on a wall. Huh?
But I think perhaps it would be interesting to track back and explain what the work actually is.
Yeah.
So, because I thought, I guess like many people were seeing it first on the internet, that it was a painting.
Yeah.
It looks very painterly and, you know, it has a very painterly surface, but now I understand that what it is a cast of the wall. And it's a cast done in a very specific Italian tradition of the fresco. So if you could develop a little bit more about how you found the process and how you did this work.
Before it was the strappo da fresco, which it was a technique to steal a fresco, which it usually they were outside in the gardens or in the buildings, and put it on a canvas. So there is a technique to take the first layers and then put it on the
layers of paint.
Of the paint and
from
the
wall. And the wall.
And the wall, yeah. It's like thick. And then put it on a canvas. Do the process on the other way and have it on a canvas. Mm-hmm. So this is somehow the same technique, but of course with different material, with contemporary material. And so I'm applying this kind of different kind of silicones that are going deep in the wall. So they are kind of reading all
the history,
all the traces, and then I'm putting some mesh to give a strong structure to it, and then I'm like ripping out the wall, and so what you see, like there are pieces of
plasters,
colors. From previous painting, because these places usually are full of graffiti, so sometimes you have this like color that you have, or sometimes even if they're nude, you have some shining paint that you reflects some reflects.
So you don't take all this white was existing. You don't take any sort of painterly.
No. And it's what it was there. Of course, it's. This is a negative,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So if there was a hole, here there is something that sticks out.
Because one of the things that was very interesting is that they look like, or this one particularly looks like the sky. Is it the material that you use, the blue silicone, the different ones have different pigments to them? Or was it like the color that existed on the wall?
On the wall.
Okay.
On the wall, or that I couldn't see, it was some layers.
It was hidden behind.
Hidden behind some layers of new paint.
Mm-hmm.
And yes.
Well, my reading as a curator is this is fantastic, because I probably, like many of you, remember when photography. The pre-digital photography, there was this feeling of excitement against the revealing. The revealing of the image. Probably if you took photography in school or university back in those days, you kind of learned to think in negative. You kind of learned to translate when you looked at those negatives through the wall and translate it into the positive. So I started doing these same translations to try and really imagine the walls, to try to imagine the places, and it just becomes a map, really, of time. It will also be, and this is just because I'm a buff of materials as well. How do you then, you roll it up? How do you transport it? How do you keep it? Is it sturdy? Will it? Then you, I understand that the works came here rolled.
Rolled, which is quite complicated to take it from. Mm-hmm. I mean, actually, those places are abandoned bunkers or houses, so actually, and they're always a kind of dodgy. I mean, it's not like the mm-hmm. most. So, and it takes a couple of days to do one. So it's everything is quite complicated. And it's not nice, it's not that nice to get out of those buildings with 2 meters roll with transparent plastic and meet the police.
Okay.
Something that happened to me last time that they asked me.
Well, the police were asking police, you, what you're like, doing.
What are you doing here? What are you doing? Just explain us. So, yeah, it's not easy, but you can roll it, and it's difficult to rip out the, and it's heavy, and it's very heavy, and it sticks to it, so it's not easy to take it off. So there is some strength to apply to it, and then I can roll it and use it as a canvas. So, but I also love the link with the emulsione.
Mm-hmm. Emulsion.
Yeah, emulsion. The emulsion before it was something, I did that. I was preparing the paper to print on it. Mm-hmm. So you had this kind of paint, and you had to do it in the dark room, and you were applying it to the paper and then exposing, and then you reveal and you have your photo. So there is a lot of photography into it, definitely.
So this is the first work, but I also, I'm completely in love with the work in the window. And I was just telling Giovanni, I would love to have been able to learn all the titles of the works by heart, because they are very long and very poetic.
Son estrellas.
Yes. So can you that title for me was I just put a layer of narrative into that work, and it connects with these other works because it's about negatives and positives, but it's also, and this is and I think this is what makes Giovanni's work so special, is also about the process of making and also about the materials and how they behave. This is about plastics and silicon, but that is this work is about metal, about bronze and about iron. So would you please explain a little bit about the title? Let's translate the title first.
No, another thing that they're all linked, all the works, they have a link in art history.
In art history.
Old technique. That's something that I really like. Because this was a Strappola fresco. That one is a raw wax, lost wax, fusion, casting. And whatever. The title is Plants to Lunares son Estrellas, which is your beauty marks are stars.
Yeah, like freckles, right?
So, like the beauty marks, like.
What are these?
Beauty marks? They're like stars. And those are raw casting, so they have not been touched after the casting. And they have been cleaned, but that's it. And I was amazed. I mean, it's like there is an order in the universe to do things, and this work underlines it so much. There is, and in order to cast in bronze some leaves, and you have practically to build a structure that is as a plant. So if you look at it, it looks like I've tried to do a plant. Actually, no, I've just tried to cast the leaves, but in order to do that and to have the metal reaching all the different point of the leaves, because it has to reach it at the same time with the same temperature, otherwise it breaks. So in order to do that, you actually are building up a plant itself. And it's really like there is an order of things.
It's one of the oldest casting techniques. It would entail the actual leaves to be built in wax, right?
Yeah.
And then the hot metal will melt the wax and replace the leaves in their space. Yeah, and the wax will...
Actually, you build the whole thing in wax, the whole structure, then you warm it up, so the wax goes down, I mean, you lose the wax.
Inside the sand.
So you have an emptiness.
In that sand.
Emptiness, you're going to...
You're going to pour in.
Yeah, you're going to pour the hot metal.
So this was the result of the process, and you decided then not to take the leaves. Because it's also a brilliant fusion of materials. There's the bronze of the leaves, and then it transforms from this very natural environment to a more industrial
iron
bar. Yeah. That's for me another of my interests is this, and you can see it back. You know, if I could always have that first original image of that kind of fusion of that kind of point where the natural world and the built world, the industrial world, collide, and I think that is quite poetic in that image as well. We could still talk about the reference in the title and the stars.
Definitely, yeah, because there is this link between us, our beauty marks, and the universe and the stars, and what is natural, what is artificial. We think the bronze is something artificial, but actually it's made out of the same material of the iron, and is the same material of everything. We really like the idea of stardust. I think there you really have it underlined that there, it's just our perception of things, but really everything on this universe, not the planet, the universe is really made up of the same material. It's just the perception that we have of things. It's our...
And bringing these two works into the conversation, and also what you say about humans and about us and the planet and the natural world, there's the two works or the two series of works that are on the top floor. It was great to see how this study, I call this study of surface, then a study of time and a study of all the, or how that time becomes readable through the surface, how you bring that back to the lines of the hand. And in the works that we see up in the first floor, there's four works, is it?
Three.
I try and imagine. And they are metal casts, or they are metal sheets where you've taken the lines of the hand as places where you've also taken the molten metal.
Yeah, and those are like scratch, they are engraved sheets of aluminium. So this idea of scars. And actually those are my lines.
Of your hand.
Of my hand as destiny, you know, which I like, this idea that we have, you know. And then the other two, they are scars. Actual scars that I have a kind of portrait of person, of people. And actually, are heavy scars that a friend of mine has on her back and another one. And also that is a very old technique, because you have this engraved material, and then with a hammer I'm going to fill the line up with another metal. So there is kind of cold fusion between the two metals, which is something that has been done back in the days. And um, so And I like the idea of the scar on overcome a scar. This idea of that something that has been painful can be solved, and but it's something that's gonna stay there. And so there is this line of another material shining that is gonna stay there, but there is like a solution of it, which is not losing something in the memory, but actually staying there, and it finds its own solution. And
And then to end is, for me, is really interesting to see the huge circle that kind of closes when you have techniques here that go, you know, centuries in the to the past, melting metal, then these casts, then working with metal, and then ending the journey with video and sound, something that is very contemporary. And I think it one of the highlights for me of this show is that all these techniques meet seamlessly. You go from metal, even if we, you know, bring in the actual photographic works, you could say it comes back to photography. Photography for me permeates all of the images and all of the works in the show. So you can go through the resolution being metal, the resolution being acrylic or
silicone,
and then into that final video where you're taking this the mark. I thought the video work deserves a few, I don't know, hours of just being there in this sort of cycle that repeats itself of coming up and coming down. But for me was the most intriguing of the pieces in the show, and I would definitely recommend you go up there and spend a little while trying to sort of get into the universe of that video. But if you would explain a little bit more how that video came to be, and also how did you work, or how did you decide to have it as part of 1982?
I mean, it's one of my last video works, and it's very linked with with this idea that we have of the individual and the effort that each one of us has to do on his own to show himself his own in a perfect and in a beautiful way, you know. So as the scars are the proof that you can overcome an accident, a problem, and so that's why I highlight with a shiny and goldy metal. In that video, you have this beautiful, perfect image, this leg, as kind of commercial setting. And I always have been amazed by these girls that they work so hard to be so perfect while not breathing. And sometimes they faint. And so you have this struggle inside that you don't see. Actually, don't see. You just see beauty. Oh wow, it's so beautiful.
Let's give a little bit of a context of what the video actually is. It lasts for how long? It lasts a few minutes, but it's the choreograph of the underwater ballet. Synchronized swimming. So most of the action you'd have to imagine, because it happens underwater. You can only perceive that through sound. And what you can see is what happens from the surface of the water outside. So I tried to sort of link it to these other works. It's about surface and what you see outside of the surface and what you have to imagine is behind the surface.
Yeah, and it's also about perception, layers of perception. Where is your layers of perception of not about tools to read a work or to read reality around you, but it's, what's your perception, your intuition about what surrounds you? So actually you have this beautiful, extremely beautiful image with these legs, with this choreography, and you hear this heart pumping, always the heart rate goes up, and it's kind of disturbing. And actually, for me, the most interesting thing of the video is what we are not seeing, because the facial expression of the girl and the struggle and the effort, it's something that we don't see, but it's there.
It all happens under the under the surface.
Under the surface. And that's why I'm saying, what's your capability to read things? Where do you stop? You stop on the first layer, on the second layer, oh, this is a beautiful thing. And then you can go always deeper and deeper and deeper.
I think for me that would end my journey through the works. I would love to bring in any questions from or any suggestions from the audience, but I would love to also reiterate the idea of the mark and how we can see the idea of the mark in all of the works, not just this, not just the photographs, also in the video, and even in the sound. It's about how we make that kind of impression in a moment. So I would definitely want to bring you all into the conversation as well. If you've got any questions for Giovanni.
And also about the water surface. If you think about now, you made me think about it. There is this water, the surface of the water is like flat and it doesn't move. And then she moves into it and it starts to move the water. And then it goes back to calm. So even there, yet you have this idea of acting, and not to acting, to
and also because the legs make some specific shapes, some specific moves. It's not like it's uncoordinated. It's like, again, a mark, a signal of some sort. I could spend ages talking about the details that you could find either by knowing things at certain places or by finding. There's one, if you see the work that is in this room, at the end of this room, there's a bit of wall that had a bit of grass that it got brought in. So I think when maybe purposely or by accident, the work brings time into this realm of sculpture, brings objects that also will fade, will transform, and the sculpture, the work, will carry them into this unknown life of art, of artworks.
And that's another thing that I always loved about photography, which, you know, with the video, you kind of you can make the audience experience something, you know. You have like a moment that goes up, a tension that is rising, and then okay. While in photography, actually, for me, it's really like a diapason, you know, just like you ring a note which lasts forever. So in photography, you get that moment and it's kind of lasting forever.
And I am on that note. And I always do this when I even talk. Sometimes artists don't like it, but I love it. Every time when I meet an artist, I always ask him or her about an influence. It could be photography, it could be music, it could be Florentine painting. Where do you get, I can see that your inspiration comes from the places, comes from the natural world, but is there a writer, an artist, a musician that resonates with you when you were doing these works, or something that you were reading where you were working and doing this, or other works upstairs?
I don't have any master, like any reference any strong reference. I have many. It is this idea of finding something that is the key. And but of course, I have some writer and some musician that they kind of come along with me. Mm. And I don't know. I'm reading to James Hillman. James Hillman.
Which is a
philosopher.
Philosopher.
Which I love very much. And but it's always something that explains me things. I do something and then I get some answer.
You understand it later. You do it first
always,
and you understand always, it later.
Always like that. Yeah. And people with the addition that are like dedicated to what they're doing, that's the most, I get there the most of the energy for my work. But in general, when I see somebody that is doing something with effort, with soul and effort, it's something that moves me.
Excellent. Well, on behalf of myself and also of the gallery, I would like to say thank you to Giovanni and thank you everyone. I know there's some drinks in the back, and it would be lovely to just walk around the show with Giovanni, have a glass of wine or a beer. If you've got particular questions you want to talk to him or me, we'll be more than happy. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pardon?
Thank you.